When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
And he was discriminating against Asians. Said if you hire the wrong people, we'll dock your pay. We'll terminate you. Mm-hmm. And one of his subsidiary companies, Red Hat, the chairman of that company, which is owned by IBM, said they have terminated people if they don't mm-hmm. follow along with these racial quotas. And our lawyer said that's a violation of the Civil Rights Act to use that kind of discrimination in the hiring process.
Wherever you guys are watching this show, I would truly appreciate it if you follow or subscribe. It helps a lot with the algorithm. It helps us get bigger and better guests, and it helps us grow the team. Truly means a lot. Thank you guys for supporting, and here's the episode. Ladies and gentlemen, we are back. We're here with James O'Keefe today to expose some companies, aren't we?
That's right.
Yeah. So the latest one was IBM, I believe.
You bet.
Yeah. What happened there?
Well, there's a CEO of IBM, Arvind Krishna, was on an all-staff call, and one of the higher-ups in IBM provided that recording to me, and he was discriminating against Asians, said if you hire the wrong people, we'll dock your pay, we'll terminate you. Mm. And one of his subsidiary companies, Red Hat, the chairman of that company, which is owned by IBM, said they have terminated people if they don't follow along with these racial quotas. And our lawyer said that's a violation of the Civil Rights Act to use that kind of discrimination in the hiring process.
Right. That's interesting, because there are certain... Are there laws that make it required to hire certain races and genders?
Well, there are laws that prohibit discriminating on the basis of race and gender, and then Title VII, and also this recent Harvard Supreme Court case, which makes it even more problematic. And as I was coming into your podcast, I was just recording one on a pharmaceutical company called Sanofi, same mm-hmm. sort of thing. The vice president was on a Zoom meeting with her leadership,
yeah,
and she was saying this, you must hire these many people of color, et cetera. So it's problematic. And the CEO of IBM responded on another all-staff call, brought me up and said, now don't give this any reaction. Mm-hmm. But he was telling that to the whole company, and that was leaked to me, and I published it.
You think he would have found out who leaked it the first time before having another call?
You know, I've been doing this for 20 years. I'm 39. I started when I was 19, and I've never seen this sort of explosion of whistleblowing before.
It's, wow.
It, one or two people usually, and they'll fire the person. That's why. But if there's 100 people leaking and talking and providing information, there's really not much the leadership can do.
That's true. So what do you think caused this spike in whistleblowing recently?
That's a great question. I think a couple factors. People are generally, they're more passionate, I think, about doing the right thing and following their conscience than they've ever been. Politics has become more important in society. There's more at stake, and there just seems to be something happening. I mean, the world's on fire. People are very divided. People place a lot of emphasis on their conscience more than they ever seem to have mm-hmm. before. And maybe people are overcoming their fear as well.
Yeah, I think maybe social media has amplified it a bit. People are more open to speak about it if they see more people exposing things as well.
I think so. I think that's another variable.
Yeah. And you also exposed BlackRock, right?
We did a story on BlackRock that was in June. That was a recruiter at BlackRock saying that they buy the wallets of politicians and they don't want people to know about their influence. And this is a guy that was met an undercover reporter on Bumble or Tinder or Hinge. That's where we meet a lot of the people, and they're loose-lipped, and they talk over lunch or dinner, and they spill their secrets.
Wow, so you got undercover people on Bumble?
Yes.
That is smart, because they would never expect to find an undercover person there.
Correct. It's sometimes the subject reaches out to our person as opposed to us trying to, like, kind of target someone. We don't really set out to find a particular person. You know, we kind of cast a wide net and the stories tend to find us.
Yeah. So are there any large companies just doing things by the books, or is there corruption at every single one of them?
I think there's, you know, Lincoln Stevens was a legendary muckraker 110 years ago. He said, you can shoot me out of a gun and wherever I land, there's a story. Or you could throw me at a dartboard and wherever I land, there's going to be a story. It's just human nature.
Right.
And I think people say and do things that they're not willing to publicly disclose. There are demons inside of all of us. Perhaps mm-hmm. there are skeletons in everyone's closet. There has to be a certain threshold where the public has a right to know it.
Yeah.
But there usually is always a story somewhere, and there's a
shout out.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped. Streaming June 4th. Only on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
To today's sponsor, NordVPN, my personal favorite VPN. You can change your virtual location very easily with Nord with one click and sometimes even zero click if you want to have on auto connect. It's got amazing speed. It's probably one of the fastest VPNs out there in my experience. And you can use one Nord account on 6 devices to make sure the whole fam's taken care of. You can also use it to avoid price discrimination. So you can see if certain products or services are cheaper in other areas or regions, which I have personally used on flights. And believe it or not, I've saved some money. You can also use it to secure your connection, protect yourself from hackers, especially in public locations like airports, hotels, etc. You can make sure you're safe there. It's supported on every major platform, Windows, Android, iOS, etc. So don't worry about where you can use it. They got you taken care of. You can get an exclusive deal at the link in the description, nordvpn.com/DHS. If you're listening on audio, we will link it in the video. It's risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Check it out, guys.
A stunning lack of integrity in within people and institutions has become very greedy. And maybe it was that way, all of it. We just never knew.
Could be, right?
But nowadays, there's a concerted effort to, with what we do, exposing people. I think people are afraid of getting caught.
Yeah,
but there's arrogance. There's a sort of conceit, this narcissism or nihilism, and people keep doing the dirty deeds.
That's true. So you haven't seen a slowdown at all since you started 20 years ago.
No, it's been actually the last 2 weeks. There's been an exponential uptick with the IBM thing was a first for me because I've never seen so many insiders.
Mm.
I mean, I think Elon Musk. Another variable was the purchase of X.
Mm-hmm.
I think X is the greatest thing to happen to the First Amendment of free speech in history of the United States.
That's crazy.
And I think X is going to eat Instagram for breakfast in terms of how much engagement that you get.
You get
can
a
just
lot.
Put a video on X, like your investigative report, put it right on X, and bam, it blows up as long as you've got the goods.
Yeah.
So that IBM, I was getting DMs, boom, 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 boom. Like, I mean, 190 DMs from IBM employees just DMing me on X.
Insane.
I mean, I've never seen that before.
Yeah. And X is the one platform where you can't get shadow banned.
That's what they say. I don't know how it works. I was banned on Twitter in 2021.
What'd you get banned for?
There was an incident where we filmed outside of a Facebook executive's house in Palo Alto, and we failed to blur the number on the lamppost outside of his house.
So a DDoS or whatever.
Yeah, but first of all, CNN ambushed some grandmother outside of her trailer home and didn't blur the number on the house. It was definitely a double standard.
Right, right. Dang. Yeah that's unfortunate because that wasn't your intention, but it just so happened to be there.
Yeah, so we were very careful about over-blurring every license plate, every...
Oh, really? So when you film now, you have to blur car license plates?
There's definitely a double standard. Like, we go above and beyond, you know, what typical news organizations do. They can get away with doxing people, targeting people. But that's the reason they gave. There was another thing where they said I was creating a fake Twitter account because one of my undercover people was using a Twitter account. And says, well, you're creating a fake Twitter account. But that wasn't actually true, so I sued Twitter for defamation.
Oh, wow.
Try to get around Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. That didn't work. They dismissed the lawsuit. And then in December of last year, 2022, Elon Musk reinstated my account.
Nice. Have you had any communication with him?
He's just yesterday, he tweeted about the spaces that I did on the story I did. I'm in here in Las Vegas. I came from Phoenix, and I was reporting on the buses bringing migrants into the airport, the black limousines. So I walked up to the limousine driver and said, "Hey, who do you work for?" Migrants are getting off the bus, and we did a spaces on that, and some of the airline pilots were whistleblowing and went on spaces last night with me and concealed their voice. Now X has a feature where you can distort your voice on the space.
Oh, wow.
So Elon, I was talking to Elon on Twitter, but I've never met him face to face, but on, I guess.
What a cool feature, man, because now people will really speak up.
Correct.
Yeah. What caused you to be this passionate 20 years ago? Was there a specific incident?
Yeah, I was watching local news and as a high school student, and I was pretty outraged at what I viewed. This is in the late 90s, early 2000s. Just the lack of the media's ability to accurately and properly report the news. Mm-hmm. Something inside of me was felt contempt towards the way the media operates. So I started reading newspapers every day, or the New York Times every day. And I'm from New Jersey, so.
Same. I went to Rutgers. I saw you did really? As well. Yeah.
Star Ledger.
Classic. I never read it, but
now,
I
this was 2003. So they gave the USA Today, Star Ledger, and New York Times. And I would sit in the dining hall and I would just read from, you know, 9 a.m. to noon. I would just read the paper back to back, just sort of obsessed with the news. And I became quite passionate about these issues. And I eventually started my own little monthly magazine at Rutgers called The Centurion in October 2004.
That's interesting. So you knew back then, because I feel like people really started waking up when Trump got elected, but you were on this 20 years earlier.
Yeah. And a kind of gonzo muckraking video. I guess the best way I've heard it described is like Borat meets 60 Minutes. Mm-hmm. And there was this group called the Yes Men. I don't know if you've ever heard of them, but they were an agitprop punk group where they would, you know, it's like Borat. They would go to oil conferences and they would dress up as in these large survival ball suits, and they would say the world's going to be, global warming's going to kill us all. And they would try to put people in these awkward situations and expose people. So that was one of the inspirations. And this was 2004. Facebook had not yet even barely started. YouTube didn't exist. Twitter didn't exist. The iPhone didn't exist. You know, it's certainly a different world now.
Yeah.
And I had a magazine where I did Adobe Photo InDesign, and I laid it all out every month and just handed them out on campus.
Nice. That's cool, man. What a start. Grassroots. And how are you able to expose these companies without opening yourself up legally to getting sued or something like that?
Well, oftentimes I do get sued. I've been sued 30 times.
Damn.
I've been sued by the company I founded, which ousted me. That's another story here we could discuss. But oftentimes the companies don't want to sue because by giving a reaction, they're bringing more attention to, like Google. We did a whistleblower story on Google 4 years ago and they didn't sue. They often peacock or threaten to sue, but I think they're a little bit in danger of feeding the flames.
Because in the discovery, stuff's going to come up and that could be...
Usually you don't want to go that far. If you're barreling towards discovery, then you're going towards a jury trial. But I've gone the distance in court. I've gone to jury verdict twice in 3 years.
Which companies were those against?
The first case was involving a woman named Shirley Teeter, who sued me for defamation. Mm. And she was alleged to have bird dogged at Trump rallies, basically coming up. She was a woman, a Democratic Party woman in North Carolina. And she would get Trump people to sort of punch back at her. Mm. So the idea was that she, was she instigating this or not?
Right.
So I reported on that, and she sued me for defamation, and it went all the way to a jury trial in North Carolina federal court.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Mm-hmm. Took 2 years. I don't settle these cases. And then right before the jury issued the verdict, the judge threw it out in what's called a directed verdict, which is very rare. Mm. And the judge said, this is ridiculous. If you sued 60 Minutes for what you're suing James O'Keefe for, people would laugh at you. So sometimes you have to take it all the way to the end for people to kind of see how absurd it is. And it's very expensive. And the second case was involving a group called Democracy Partners in Washington, D.C., went undercover as volunteers inside this group, and they sued for breach of fiduciary duty and trespass, arguing that I have a duty to the company because I was a volunteer. Now, we argue we never signed any documents, no non-disclosure agreements, so that too went to jury verdict, and we lost. It is a civil case, not criminal.
Got it.
In D.C., and that's currently being appealed.
Got it. Wow. Now, how stressful is this, like dealing with this many legal battles? You said 30 battles since you started.
I think it's most stressful managing the lawyers. Dealing with lawyers is not easy.
Yeah, and the cost must be insane.
It's just beyond. I mean, it's very...
Are you interested in coming on the Digital Social Hour podcast as a guest? Well, click the application link below in the description of this video. We are always looking for cool stories, cool entrepreneurs to talk to about business and life. Click the application link below, and here's the episode, guys.
Philanthropic, you really can't be greedy doing this because you know, the profitable thing would be not to not do it at all.
Right.
And you have to figure out how to manage the lawyers, which is something I still haven't figured out exactly out how to do.
Yeah. So you see it as like just the price you pay to be able to expose.
It's a price. And I don't know if the commercial imperative or making money is compatible with investigative work. It's very expensive. It takes a toll on you psychologically, emotionally, financially. And which is its own type of hell because, you know, usually these sorts of traumatic things last minutes, but this lasts years.
Yeah.
And if you don't have the right partner or the right wife or the right situation, you know, they'll put pressure on people around you. So you have to make sure you surround yourself with good people.
Wow. I don't think many people would want your job, man.
Well, you know, it depends upon what your values are and what your passions are. And right. I look at it from the position of I'm passionate about what I do and I'm not focused on the fear and the other secondary effects of it.
Yeah. I want to talk about cancel culture, which you seem to have just gone through when I was researching you, getting ousted from your own company and stuff. So what exactly happened there?
I don't exactly quite yet know. I don't think the story has fully come out, and perhaps it may, but I mean, I had my board of directors, a nonprofit organization, and 501c3, you know what this 501c3 is?
Charity, right?
It's a
charitable
group. You have to have a board, and we did this story on Pfizer. I don't know if you saw that in January, February. It was the biggest, most watched video I ever did. And and then right after that story, there was kind of an emergency, and they had a board meeting on February 6th, and a 6-hour long meeting, and they had a bunch of what a lot of people felt were bizarre grievances against me, like I stole this woman's sandwich, or I took black cars instead of Uber X, and there's nothing illegal about taking a black car. One would argue that perhaps I should be having a driver who's not a random driver. So we had to hire a driver for me and these sorts of things. And they brought these things up, and then they had a vote, and they indefinitely suspended me without
pay. Was the
vote
unanimous?
The minutes I made public in my departure video, I believe it, there was one board member who voted against it. There was a C3 and a C4, 5-1 C4. And the first in the meeting, they combined the two boards. So then there was five people. And then one of them voted against it. So
that's a real guy right there.
Yeah. And he actually died. Steve Alembic. He passed away.
That's a shame.
2 months ago. He committed.
What?
Yeah.
Okay. That seems, I mean, I got to look into that more, but that seems weird to me.
It's a whole, So anyway, that was a very difficult thing, but I learned a lot. And sometimes, as crazy as sounds, what happened to me there, I think things happen for a reason. And, I started a new company called OMG. It's going very well right now. And I've got a really solid core team. And
nice.
I learned a lot about human nature. And you know, sometimes the enemy is not out external. It's
right next to you.
It's right next to you.
And that's crazy. Because
sometimes it's inside you. It's the people you surround yourself with.
And you started that company. That was your baby.
Yeah, I started in my dad's attic when I was 24 with nothing but a crappy laptop and a Yeti microphone and a credit card.
And the fact that they're able to kick you out of your own company, having a Steve Jobs too, is just crazy to me.
Yeah, but we know how that story ended up. I mean, I think it took him how many years? 5, 10 years?
Get back.
He started Next, and then he sold Next to Apple.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very painful. And you know that saying, "What doesn't kill you makes you stronger." You're familiar with, like, Nietzsche or whoever. Well, people have to remember the first part of that saying: "What does not you." So you have to survive it, and if you do survive it, it makes you incredibly stronger. I'm not sure that many people can survive that type of pain,
because
it feels like your newborn baby is stabbing you in the back.
20 years.
But I think it's also human nature. I think it's also people. It's much more common than you would think. People get envious. People get greedy. People. It's like that Mike Tyson quote. I can't remember, but it's like people will stab you in the back the moment they can, and if you're strong enough to get back up, usually you're stronger than the guy that stabbed you in the back. Mike Tyson says it much more eloquently there. But I get it, though. But
the adrenaline kicks in and you're ready to fight.
But if you have what it takes to found a company and create something out of nothing and create jobs and raise capital and have vision, if you can do that once, you can do it again as long as you don't get disheartened.
Yeah.
It's really the hard part is getting disheartened, discouraged.
And it seems like it all was kind of coordinated and at once, like Forbes put you on the Hall of Shame list around that time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it just seemed like everything was coming at once.
Yeah, that's you know, that Forbes thing, it's like that didn't mean, I've been defamed so many times, but you have to learn to be hated in this business.
Mm.
I think that was something I learned 10 years ago, 15 years ago, which is that psychologically being disliked is a very difficult thing for people. And that was one of my first lessons, which is, you know, Wikipedia, you know, lying about you. There's nothing you can do about it.
Oh, your own page lied about
you? Oh, it's horrible. It's right now. It's doctor tapes and all this sort of thing. they highlight no successes and only perceived failures.
That's crazy. And Wikipedia is user controlled, right? Like users can edit it.
I believe so.
So that's just someone probably hating on you or something.
Yeah, but it's be lying to say it's not painful, but you have to get used to being hated.
Yeah.
And you have to be comfortable with being hated. I think things are changing, though. I think there's a populist movement in this country. Independent media. I mean, you're doing independent media right now. You're not a CNN person or a New York Times person.
I love independent media. It's harder to compromise them, in my opinion.
Yeah, and in my business, you can't have any strings attached either. You can't have anyone telling you what to do or what not to do.
Yeah.
And it's very liberating. The newspapers used to say 120 years ago, operate without fear or favor. Without fear and without favoritism. But that's really the greatest challenge, isn't it?
Yeah. How do you think traditional media can be fixed? Because from a business perspective, you know, they're getting all these donations and the advertisers are funding their whole business. So that's kind of why they're being influenced, right?
It could be fixed with the right people of character in leadership. If you have men, well, there was a book by a guy named Clarence Jones. He wrote a book. He was a reporter in Florida working for these corporate, you know, these in the late 70s, early 80s. And so you have to have bosses with balls. Mm. You have to have leadership, men in leadership, men and women who have strength. Like even that movie Spielberg made about Katharine Graham running the story on the Pentagon Papers or whatever it was.
And,
and she told the guys on the board, let's run it. You have to be able to have testicular fortitude. You have to be able to take the beating and stand up. And I just don't think we have a lot of people like that. I think we used to have that. And frankly, in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, I think you had this phenomenon where people in media would invest money like as a loss into investigative journalism.
Really?
Yeah, like it was a loss leader, meaning it was not profitable. That particular vertical in the company did not generate the revenue, but they did it anyway.
Right.
As a kind of philanthropy in the company. I don't think you have that at all. I think media companies are, if you just read the news, they're all losing money and firing people and laying people off. It's hard to find a business model for journalism at all. So you need leaders with the willpower to be kind of philanthropic, take a beating because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, I like that point of view. It shouldn't be for the money. You're right.
But sadly, it is.
It is. I guess, yeah, they feel like they have thousands of employees they got to take care of. And
yeah.
They want to be profitable. I see it from their point of view, but...
That's part of the problem with becoming big is that you now it becomes employing people and making sure everyone has a job. And if your motivation is to make money, if the purpose of your existence is to generate a profit, then you're not going to do the sorts of things that jeopardize that.
Yeah.
And I think investigative work is I haven't found a business model. I'm working on that, but I run the company, my company's as it's a loss leader on the balance sheet. Mm. Sometimes you'll spend $500,000 to do an investigation.
Wow.
Yeah.
That much?
Yes. And sometimes you spend $5 and you'll get something amazing. It's not linear, but you do what you have to do to get the story.
Now, where does that $500,000 come from? Break that down for me.
Well, it came philanthropically. Project Veritas was the 501c3. People donated.
No, I'm saying like when you're spending it on the investigation, is it for flights, hotels? Like,
well, let's say you have you have 50 employees or 70 employees. You have payroll costs. You have legal costs, which are one-third of our budget. So as much as $5 to $7 million a year on lawyers. Mm-hmm. You have the cost of the overhead, the payroll, the legal, the technology, the training, and your time as you grow. The value of your time becomes more expensive. Yeah. So if you're doing whatever, how many stories, a couple dozen a year or a dozen or two dozen a year, then divide the total number of stories about your budget by the total number of stories, you get the cost per investigation.
Mm. And how are you ensuring your news company doesn't get compromised, like the employees and everything?
You mean the new one?
Yeah.
I think I learned a lot about human nature, and I think I learned that I have to be more discerning with people because I've always, as a leader, you try to empower people, even bad people. You try to bring the best out of bad people,
right?
So I would find, people, citizens come to me and like, I want to do this, I want to do that. And I don't know them from Adam. I don't know if they're good, bad, or evil, good person. But if they want to do something that's important, I'll help them do it.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe they should not be like my right-hand man. Just because I'm empowering them, or assisting them, or training them, doesn't mean they have to be as part of my core.
Right.
Keep your core group real tight. And I think you have to find people around you who are not for sale. So let me put it to you this way. If someone was offered a $25 million bribe, and all they had to do was hurt me,
mm-hmm.
how many people would take that bet?
A lot.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
I just met you, face to face here in the last 20 minutes. I don't know you that well, and I don't assume to know whether you'd take that bet or not. But a lot of people would take that bet, and towards the end of my tenure, I kind of said to myself, you know, we're getting pretty big here, and how strong are these people?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be fearless and moral and strong, and you have to trust each other with your life.
Yeah.
It's almost like combat. So I would say that. Certainly, when you're burned so bad like that, you'll learn a valuable lesson. I think I'll be stronger and wiser as a result of what I've been through.
And you'll scale a lot more slowly on the hiring side, right?
Oh, I got 200 resumes for each position.
Damn.
It's an unbelievable. I mean, everyone wants a job. I don't know if you experienced this in your business, but everybody wants a job these days. And it's like my position is, I'm not just going to give you it. You have to prove yourself.
Right.
is like, I want to do undercover journalism. So you think I'm going to hire you and then see if you can do it? No, no, you have to go do it and then I'll hire you after you do it.
Interesting.
I'm not going to hire you and then train you and you might fail.
Yeah.
Here's a camera. Here's an instruction manual. Here's the O'Keefe Academy, OMG. You can buy it for $100, $200. You got all the tools. Go do it.
Yeah.
And I'll pay you $5,000 or $8,000, depending on how the video performs. And then I'll talk about whether I want to hire you or not.
I like that, because instead of offering a six-figure salary from the jump, let me see what you could do first.
That's one of the ways that we're doing it now.
Yeah. You recently interviewed Vivek, right?
Yes, and he interviewed me. I went to his Ohio headquarters, and we did one or the other.
Nice. What was your overall take on that? Because with politicians, it's hard to say.
He's definitely an interesting one. You know, he's I've got more people tell me, oh, do you trust him? Like everyone says, oh, what's his deal?
Yeah.
Or they say, it reminds me of Obama. He's very smooth. Mm. I mean, he's very smart. I mean, I like a lot of what he says. Mm. I like what he says. And I'm glad that he's saying a lot of what he says. And I read his book, Woke Inc. And I think we had a great interview and we had some good chemistry. Just we're about the same age. I like some of his experience on Wall Street, working with Goldman Sachs. I talked about that. So I think, it's hard. I think people really want to know who is he inside?
Yeah.
What's his motivation? That's what I was trying to ask him and ascertain. And he's very young. I'm very young too. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot in common and you can watch that interview and make up your own mind.
Yeah, and his perspective is unique because he's coming from the corporation side of things, which you're exposing. And he has that experience on his belt.
Yes. Yeah. And I think the world is certainly changing inside these companies like JP Morgan, banks, IBM. You saw it. I think a lot of people are kind of waking up and they're wanting to blow the whistle or expose what's happening. It's a phenomenon, actually.
Yeah. It's crazy. I don't know if this has ever happened
Never.
In history. Like
Never.
This level of explosion.
Not where you can just DM someone on X. I mean, back in the day, it was fax machines and carrier pigeons and everything like that. But these days, it's you could just send me a Signal message from anywhere on the planet.
Now, are you trusting Signal in terms of encryption?
I mean, there's only so much I can do. I don't know if I trust anything but God. Like, I have to trust to a degree in order for me to operate.
Yeah.
And I'm not dealing yet, not right now, with like national security secrets to the extent of like a Julian Assange or Ed Snowden, right. At least not yet. I'm sure I'll get there and I'll have to cross that
very
bridge.
Very quickly, I think, too.
I also think I'd be careful with that because, I mean, as a journalist, I have First Amendment rights and protections. Once you start getting into that stuff, that's when they start to indict you.
Yeah.
And you have to be very careful what you say to the source and they'll just accuse you of saying something. And with Julian Assange, was it Bradley Manning? They indicted him and I think his quote was telling Bradley Manning over whatever he was talking over, some type of encrypted thing. He goes, well, my curious eyes will never run dry.
Mm.
Also known as, please keep sending me stuff. And that was enough to indict him?
Wow.
I mean, as a journalist, if someone else is breaking the law, as long as I played no part in it and I say I'll take a look at whatever you send me, I think the journalist has a First Amendment right to receive that information.
Yeah, I think going up against the government's probably the toughest foe you can face.
I've been arrested by the FBI in 2010 and raided by the FBI in 2021.
Jeez, that is crazy.
Yeah.
Why'd they raid you?
Over the president's daughter's diary.
Biden's?
Biden's daughter Ashley had a diary and some tipsters tipped us off to it. We looked into it and we actually reached out to the Biden campaign for comment.
Mm-hmm.
And then the lawyer for the Biden sent that email to the Department of U.S.
Wow.
Attorneys in New York and said, basically, I'm trying to extort them.
What?
I was asking for comment. So then they got a search warrant, a secret warrant in 2021 to get my emails, records, photos, secret. Well, it's like what they do to terrorists.
Yeah.
And then a year later, they raided my home.
That is
took
insane.
My two phones. Complete insanity.
Damn, you probably had a lot of stuff on your phones too. That's terrible.
Well, think about what you have on your phone. And certainly nothing criminal, but personal things.
Memories.
Personal things.
Bank accounts.
And then they can leak that to the New York Times. And
yeah.
So it's very psychologically terrifying.
Wow. I also saw on your Instagram, someone was tapping your phone or something.
Oh, I mean, I don't have any direct evidence of that. Certain, just circumstantial, you know.
Yeah.
It's certainly suspicious stuff happening.
I mean, at your level, you probably just assume you're being watched or something.
Yeah, you have to. I call it the 12 jurors rule. 12 jurors rule. You always have to assume there's someone watching. So never do anything that you'd be ashamed of doing.
Right.
It's your private life, personal, in your bedroom. That's different. I'm just talking about in your business affairs, you know, in your operating and doing an investigation. You can't keep secrets in this business. The only real secret you can actually legally keep is the identity of a source. The Supreme Court has protected that.
Interesting.
And the Supreme Court has also protected the identity of a donor, a financial person.
Oh.
Their First Amendment right to associate with you.
Yeah.
That's actually a case from 1954, NAACP case, because people were donating to that organization to protect African Americans, and the donors didn't want to be retaliated against.
Yeah.
So that's the same right. But other than those two things, your life has to be an open book.
Yeah. James, I can't believe we're out of time already. I just looked and we're at zero, but where can people find you, man? And what are you working on?
O'KeefeMediaGroup.com. And I'm working on these whistleblowers in immigration and corporate America and in 2024 elections. Stay tuned.
Thanks for coming on, man.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for watching, guys. As always, see you next time.